This is the Championship Chat Podcast, your home of news, views and debate from England's second tier.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Championship Chat Podcast. I'm your host, Elliot Jackson, and I'm joined as always by George Smith. George, how are you?
Oh, not bad, mate, not bad. Been better. Obviously got a few ongoing family issues at the minute that obviously you're aware of, but not going to go into detail and sort of bore people on here because we're here to talk about the Championship, and I'm hoping that an hour in your company talking our favourite topic will take my mind to more positive vibes.
I don't think you can say Sheffield Wednesday dire performance at Swansea's family issues, for the record.
No, well, I don't really want to talk about that, but I'm not really going to have a choice, am I?
No, we will be talking about that. But we're going to talk about a lot of good teams that play good football in the Championship before that. It's worth mentioning that we are recording this on Monday evening, so I am watching Coventry against Huddersfield as we speak. We will talk about Huddersfield's change of management later on in the pod, but there'll be no in-depth analysis on that game, unfortunately, due to the timing of our record, which is always the case, to be fair, for Monday night games. And we are 24 hours later than we usually would be recording because of work schedules anyway. So we'll talk a little bit about Huddersfield in depth later on, but I'll give you some live goal updates if anything happens, given that that'll be of interest to those listening as well. As always, make sure you are subscribed to this podcast feed. You can find it on all your usual platforms and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at ChampChatPod24. And a massive thank you, as always, to our sponsors, Cards Accepted, for supporting the podcast this season. If you're looking to take car payments with no contract or monthly fees, make sure you visit cardsaccepted.co.uk. They provide a discount on the RRP of all Sumo devices, so make sure you go and check them out. And over the next hour, we're going to be talking about a brilliant weekend in the Championship, a goal-heavy weekend in the Championship, as Plymouth respond with 6 goals against Norwich.
This is the Championship Chat Podcast.
So, George, quite a lot of good games this weekend. I think pretty much every game we're going to talk about has got a pretty good hook and headline on it. But we are going to start at Home Park, where Plymouth Argyle produced probably the most eye-catching result of the weekend, beating Norwich City 6-2 at Home Park. Probably the most impressive part of this is the fact that Plymouth were coming off the back of losing 4-1 to Bristol City in the week. Their worst performance quite comfortably of the Championship season. They made a lot of changes for that game in midweek, the likes of Hardy, Barley Mumba, Morgan Whittaker all on the bench, but they were all restored to the starting lineup in this one. And they made an absolutely lightning start to get themselves in front. They were 4-0 up, in fact, before the half-time whistle blew. I thought Ryan Hardy, and he didn't get on the score sheet, interestingly, given how prolific he's been in the opening weeks of the season. But I thought he was absolutely brilliant, leading the line. He presses so well. He's got great dynamism to stretch defences in behind. But he's not just a six-yard box striker either, although he's been finishing like one at the start of this season. He's also someone that can link play, and he did get a couple of assists in this game as well, setting up Whittaker, who obviously got a hat-trick. So much, quite naive from Norwich, really, because Whittaker's probably one of the best ball strikers from range, from outside the area in the Championship. Certainly was in League One, and he's a bit of a specialist skill set for him. So to give him the opportunity to strike pretty unopposed from the edge of the box, you're asking for trouble. That was 1-0, and obviously the second followed soon after. The third goal is really poor defending, but great feet from Finn Azaz. I also think Angus Gunn's positioning is very weird. He looks way too far to his near post and leaves a lot of the goal. If you look where Finn Azaz's strike actually goes in, it's quite central in the goal. So although it's brilliant, and I don't want to take anything away from the Plymouth attacker, it's pretty poor goalkeeping, in my opinion. His positioning's all off. But this was Plymouth at their brilliant best. They were fantastic. We know how good they are. We know they're going to pick up the bulk of their points at Home Park. But when you look at the way that they attack, look, let's be fair, Plymouth have not got the deepest squad in the Championship. When they make changes and bring them and still try and play with this attacking style and philosophy, they're going to get burned potentially, as they did in midweek. But when they've got their best 11 out there, particularly at home, they could be a match for anyone in the Championship, and they proved that at the weekend. Whittaker was a brilliant signing in the summer. Still thought it was weird that Swansea didn't try and utilise him in some way from January onwards. I'm not shocked that they sold him, but I thought they would have given him a better go last season after recalling him. Barley Mumba, of course, brilliant pickup, although he's probably one of the quieter of the attackers. Hardy's been really good, and let's not forget Hardy was out of contract in the summer, so him and Ennis, who of course went to Blackburn Rovers, they could have lost both the strikers, and Hardy looks like maybe a few other championship clubs should have tried a little bit harder for him, because he's been brilliant at the start of this season. Even though he didn't score, he was the linchpin for everything that was good about Plymouth Argyle, in my opinion. And that's, you know, some statement considering Morgan Whittaker got a hat trick. So great result for Plymouth. Norwich haven't been the same. You know, they've lost 3 out of 4. They've not been the same since they lost Josh Sargent, of course. Ashley Barnes is now out with a long-term injury too. So big opportunity for Adam Eder in what's good, probably going to be a 3 month period that's going to potentially make or break his Norwich City career, if I'm being completely honest, because he's been promising for a while, but now's the opportunity. He's going to get a run down the middle. He needs to take that and prove it. He did get a couple of goals late on in this one, but they weren't any more than consolation goals, if we're being completely honest. Brilliant result for Plymouth, and they'll be really pleased to have got themselves back up the table after a disappointing couple of results.
Absolutely. I mean, Plymouth, we said, didn't we, from the very outset, before this, you know, the first ball of the season was kicked, Plymouth were going to cause a lot of problems for teams at home park. And by and large, they've done that so far this season. They've only lost one home game so far, and that was against Southampton in the very, very last minute of the game that afternoon back in August. But they've beaten Blackburn, they've beaten Huddersfield, and now they've absolutely crucified Norwich. So it's no great surprise to see what Plymouth have done at home so far this season. Their home record in League One on their way to winning the title last season was nothing short of exceptional. They racked up something like, I think it was 21 wins out of their 23 home league games last season. So their home form was always going to be key to their progress this season. And by and large, yes, they've had some disappointing results recently, losing at Preston, losing at Bristol City quite heavily last midweek. But overall, they've had a really, really successful start to the season, and it's come as no surprise to me. I really like the team that's been built down there at Home Park. They recruited really, really well in the summer, bringing back key loanees from last season. Obviously, Whittaker, Ballymumba, the star additions, but the likes of Finn Azaz. Then they brought in the likes of Luke Cundall to beef up that midfield a little bit more. The recruitment was spot on for me. I really like what they did. So a huge statement of intent to blow Norwich away. Bit of a freakish result. They're not going to be able to do that every week. It is a flash in the pan scoreline. We don't see them very often in this division. But when they come along, they're moments to savour and moments to remember. And Plymouth Argyle fans who were there on Saturday afternoon will remember that result for a very, very long time. It was a remarkable performance inspired by a Morgan Whittaker treble, as you mentioned. Ryan Hardy, like you say, though he didn't score, still a very, very key part of it. A couple of assists. That's 5 goals and 3 assists in 8 games this season. 1 goal contribution per game. He's had a remarkable start to the campaign. And bearing in mind, he'd never, ever played in the Championship before until the start of this season. He's made the step up with absolutely no fuss whatsoever. He's made it look easy. And there was questions, I think, for Plymouth, though. Obviously, Whittaker and Mumba are great technical players and will contribute goals and assists and creativity. I think there was just a few question marks about who could lead that Plymouth attack as their out-and-out number nine, because they didn't sort of bring in a statement striker in the summer, did they? They didn't bring in that pinnacle forward that you expect as a newly promoted team to go out there. And
line with Whittaker and Mumba, didn't they?
They did, from wide areas. But Hardy, I mean, he stepped up tremendously. Like I said, 5 goals, 3 assists in 8 games. He's making the step up look so simple, and he's adapted brilliantly. So I think Stephen Schumacher can be really, really pleased with the response of his team. And I've actually read some comments of his today, actually, in the Football League paper, funnily enough. I've had a read of that today. And he said, after the defeat to Bristol City in midweek, we didn't really have to do a lot to get a reaction. We just knew that we had to do something. And my word, did they get one. Going from conceding 4 in midweek to then replying by scoring 6 at the weekend. That's a sign of character and a really good mentality within the squad. So hats off to Plymouth. A great result. Still ticking along reasonably well, comfortably in 12th place, 10 points on the board after their first 8 games. Some may say that they're doing better than many expected. For me, I think it's just about where I expected them. I had them, in 14th place in my 1-24s, comfortably looking like a solid mid-table team. Home form will, of course, be very, very key to their ambitions this season. But hey-ho, if you win at home and you play like that, 9 times out of 10, you're going to be absolutely fine.
Absolutely. In any other week, George, we would have led with a 7-goal thriller, and Ipswich Town beat Blackburn Rovers 4-3. That was a game that I was at, a nice 16-hour round trip to Portman Road. Nice ground to tick off as well. Not been there before. a really nice stadium, to be fair. It reminded me a lot of sort of the more old school grounds, a little bit like Hillsborough, actually. I got that sort of atmosphere. Everyone was packed in, 30,000 there. And a pretty bonkers game, in truth. I kind of want to break this into two because I want to say how impressed I was with Ipswich Town, because they were absolutely brilliant, particularly in the first half. Harry Clark with a brilliant strike after only 4 minutes into the back of the net. Nothing the goalkeeper could have done about that, but that was the only one that probably there was nothing the goalkeeper could have done about, because it's a bad error from Ainsley Pearce for the second. He's coming under quite a lot of criticism from the Blackburn Rovers fan base at the moment. A lot of people questioning whether there should be a change in goal. It'll be interesting to see what Thomason does in the next couple of games and whether he does make that alteration. For the third one as well, it's pretty poor from Hayden Carter to let George Hurst run off him. But again, the keeper, a little bit hesitant. Could he come and get it? The ball travels a long way before Hurst pokes it past the goalkeeper. But just in terms of how Ipswich played, in particularly in the first half, I thought George Hurst was absolutely exceptional leading the line. Of course, a sweet moment for him as well against the team that he was on loan at last season. Didn't score a single goal for Blackburn, barely had a kick in truth, really suffered after not having a proper pre-season. He absolutely he had Hayden Carter on toast, and Hayden Carter's been absolutely exceptional in 2023. That's the toughest game he's had this year, I would say. Equally on the opposite flank, Harry Pickering, who's been pretty good defensively under Thomason, really struggled against Wes Byrne. And then even more so, Amari Hutchinson looked absolutely fantastic when he came on. How he's not starting for this Ipswich team just is a testament to their strength in depth, because Wes Byrne's played very well as well. But then Hutchinson just looks unbelievable, the way he can just ghost past players as if they're not there. He's obviously on loan from Chelsea. First time I've had an opportunity to look at him in the flesh. Of course, scored the winner for Ipswich at Southampton in midweek. He looks really, really good. So I was really impressed with Ipswich. Nathan Broadhead, again, I thought he was exceptional as well. He plays on the left wing when Ipswich don't have the ball, in a 4-3-3. But as soon as they get the ball, it becomes more of a back three. You've got Leif Davies as playing as a left winger, essentially, so high. And then you've got Broadhead comes off that left wing into the pocket. So you've got Chaplin and Broadhead almost playing as number 10s. And they isolated Adam Wharton, who is a fantastically gifted footballer on the ball, but he's not a defensive midfielder. He's playing there for his qualities on the ball. He's a deep line playmaker. That's why he's playing at the base of Blackburn's midfield, not for his defensive qualities. And as a single pivot, he got exposed badly in that first half. And that's not particularly a dig at Wharton either. That's more about the structure of the midfield and what Thomason wanted. And it didn't quite work because Ipswich played rings around them. That said, as much good as Ipswich were in the first half, and they were also very dangerous in the second, Blackburn were much better in the second half going forward. Of course, they scored through Arne Sigurdsson on his debut, which is a player that Blackburn Rovers fans have been very eager to see, but he got injured in pre-season, been out for 2 months with a groin injury. He took his goal really well, great composure in front of goal. And then, of course, the comeback. Harry Leonard forced the own goal from Clark. He's had a great week, although Blackburn have lost both games. Leonard scored his second of the season against Sunderland in the week, and then, of course, forced the error for the own goal. Could have very nearly had a goal himself had Hladky not pulled off a very good save. And then Sam Smodic with goal number 5 for the season. He's right up there in the scoring charts. He only scored 5 goals for Blackburn all of last season, and he's already matched that tally this season. And they're going to need goal scorers. He took the goal so well. It's a great touch, and it's a ruthless finish, which is something Blackburn just haven't done this season. They've not taken their opportunities. Again, at 3-3, it could have gone either way. Both teams were really in it. But it was Ipswich that got the win. And again, I think you're looking at Ainsley Pearce. Can he catch it potentially? I'm not a goalkeeping expert, so I'm not going to say he should definitely catch it and shouldn't punch it. But if you're going to punch it, you've got to clear the penalty area. That said, it's a fantastic touch and a fantastic finish from Massimo Luongo. So Pearce will be a little bit unlucky by the fact that it's been absolutely ruthlessly dispatched by Luongo. But I think if he decides to punch it, and I don't know whether that, it didn't look like the right decision, but I'm not a goalkeeping expert, you've got to punch it further than the edge of the box. Well, it didn't even clear the box. It was inside the box long as he struck it in. So really, really good game this. I was speaking to some Ipswich Town fans on the train back home, and they were saying Blackburn's the best team they've seen this season. I would probably say that Ipswich are the best team I've seen this season as well in the flesh. So really, really good game to watch, and a 7-goal thriller that I think both teams will be, Blackburn won't be happy because they'll be really disappointed with the defending. But to score 3 goals away at Portman Road is not you know, there are positives to unpick from the performance, and Ipswich, of course, will be delighted with a seventh win in eight games.
First things first, did you need to lie down to recover afterwards?
Do you know what? I'm used to it with Blackburn Rovers. I would have said yes, but I was at Millwall 3, Blackburn Rovers 4 on the last day of last season. So I actually said to one of the media lads at Blackburn who I was sat next to, I said, as bad as they were in that first half, and they were really poor between the second goal and half time, Ipswich could have had, you know, an extra one or two on top of the three that they got. I did say to him, I said, you never know with this team, because do you remember how bad they were at Millwall? And then they literally did exact the same, apart from they conceded the seventh goal rather than score it. So that was quite funny, really.
Yeah, pretty crackers game, wasn't it? Let's be honest. It was
interested, Huddersfield have just conceded and Coventry are winning 1-0.
Matt Godden, by any chance?
No, Ellis Sims has hit a shot. Nichols has pulled off a great save, and the save's hit the attacker who was running in, who looks miles offside but isn't offside, and it's gone in, so it's a little bit lucky.
Fair enough. Anyway, back to Ipswich Blackburn. I mean, I think let's look at, sort of zoom out from the game and look at Ipswich as a whole. Myself and you, pre-season, we didn't sort of sign up to the hype about Ipswich, did we? Neither of us tipped them for a top six finish. Obviously, there was a lot of people that tipped them for the top six. Some went as far as the top two. Myself and you didn't really buy into that. We thought they'd have a steady first season back, top 10 would be a successful first campaign back in the Championship. However, the more and more you see of this team, the consistency, the momentum they've got, the role that they're on, they've certainly got it in them to at least get a top six spot this season. They are on a remarkable run of form.
United in Wilder's first.
Yeah, they're very similar comparisons, aren't they? Seven wins.
Well drilled.
Seven wins from the first eight games. It's a remarkable run of form. Obviously, in the past week, they beat Sheffield Wednesday. They won at Southampton. Then, obviously, beat Blackburn. They're scoring a good amount of goals at home at Portman Road. Still leaking probably a few more than Kieran McKenna would like. But they've certainly got the firepower to make other teams work to get something from the game. It's sort of, if you're going to score two, we're still going to be able to score two. So just goes to show, Leeds had to score four there to win. Blackburn scored three, got nothing. Cardiff scored two, got nothing. So it goes to show that it is a very hard place to go and you've got to work hard, even though they can be got at. But their attacking quality, and so well drilled as well. You've mentioned there about the likes of George Hurst, Nathan Broadhead, Connor Chaplin obviously has had a good start to the season, but the importance of Massimo Luongo in that midfield, who of course scored the winner on Saturday, he is so key in making that team tick. Obviously, he's had his injury issues down the years. We saw that at QPR, at Sheffield Wednesday, but since going to Ipswich, he's taken his time to get up to speed, but he's such an integral part of the way that Kieran McKenna wants his team to play. So Ipswich have got so much going for them. Again, they didn't really, to be fair, they didn't do a lot in the summer in terms of strengthening the squad massively. There was only a few injections of quality here and there. Similarly to Plymouth, they didn't go out and buy a star-studded number nine to lead their attack. They obviously brought George Hurst back on a permanent deal in the hope that he'd be able to make the step up and start to deliver at Championship level for the first time. So far, so good. He's had a steady start to the season and looks like a player now ready to make the Championship his stage and deliver week in, week out. So there's so much to like about that Ipswich front line with Chapel in the 10, Broadhead left. Then you've got Wes Burns on the right. Amari Hutchinson can play there. He can play on the left. There's so much about this team to like. The nucleus of the midfield is there. The full-back in Leif Davis on the left side, superb. So Kieran McKenna has got a lot going for him. And he's proven himself now as a manager who is certainly one to watch. League One, they steamrolled teams towards the end of last season. They made it look easy at times. They were blowing teams away on that eight-game winning run that they went on between about the middle of February and I think it was late March, early April. And then obviously they drew one, then they won another five. They had a tremendous end to last season and they've just carried that momentum forward. The feel-good factor around the club has just grown and grown and grown. And Ipswich on the pitch and off it as well are benefiting from that. So a lot to like about them. Didn't initially subscribe to the hype that they were going to be capable of mounting another promotion tilt. But I think the more you see of them, the way they're getting results, the consistency they're finding, I think you've got to take them just that little bit more seriously as each week passes by, because momentum's a wonderful thing in football. And Ipswich and Plymouth as well, to a certain degree, they've had a steady start to the season, albeit not quite as flamboyant and as expressive as Ipswich have had it, but Plymouth have had a steady start, and both of those have just built that momentum. And I think you look at Ipswich's next two league games, as we record this Monday night, they've got Wolves in the Carabao Cup on Tuesday night, but in terms of the next two league games, Huddersfield away on Saturday, and then Hull City at home next Tuesday. Both will be very different tests, but Ipswich will be looking at those two fixtures and thinking, yeah, if we are going to be serious about promotion, we'll be looking at 6 points, and I wouldn't rule it out, even though Hull, who we're going to talk about shortly, are on a very good run themselves.
Very impressed with Leeds United, George. They beat Watford 3-0, and let's be fair, although they didn't break the deadlock until the 67th minute, it was an absolute barrage of pressure. It was Daniel Backman against Leeds United's attackers, in truth, and Leeds outclassed Watford. They were really, really good. They did get the opening goal after a lovely cross by Dan James. Of course, they're going to be out without Willy Nonto for a little period. Now he's got an ankle ligament damage, so he's going to have a few weeks on the sidelines. But they've got strength and depth in those areas. They've got Dan James to come in. Obviously, Somerville's been predominantly playing on the right as well. And then you've got Jayden Anthony, of course, who scored in this game as well. The second one came before that through Jorginho Ruta, who was very, very good in this game. And he set up the third one as well for Anthony to come on as a sub who finished very composed. We know Anthony's good enough to be a top player at this championship level. He did so with Bournemouth 18 months ago, and he was one of their best players. So him on the left, I'm hoping for, with Somerville and James competing on the right. And then Pirro and Ruta. Ruta looked really good in this game. It feels like he's starting to come of age a little bit now. He's starting to get, you know, he's starting to bang his chest a little bit, get the fans behind him. He's becoming a bit of a cult hero at Leeds. And I think you saw the physical attributes he brings to this team, the raw skill with that third goal, with the way he just shrugs a couple of challenges off, little step over to get it onto his left foot, and a lovely ball through for Anthony to run onto as he's scampering away. I personally think at the moment, and of course this changes week by week, I still think my prediction of Leicester to win the league and your prediction of Leicester to win the league looks pretty bang on. I think Leeds United are definitely my current favourites to finish second. I think they are currently playing like the second best team in the league. I would say Ipswich are up there right now, but I have less belief of Ipswich sustaining this purely just down to squad size and depth. That's not to say they can't be competing for a top six finish, but for the top two, I think Leicester and Leeds are leading the way, in my opinion, right now.
Well, I said, didn't I, after the Millwall win last Sunday night when they won 3-0 at the Den, I said it felt like a victory that announced their arrival this season and sort of sent out a statement to say, we are ready to play now. We've had a bit of a slow start in different results, but that felt like a key juncture in what potentially could have been the start of a good Leeds United run. And we sit here just over a week later, 7 points in the last three games. Victory at Millwall was followed up with a 0-0 draw away at Hull, and then obviously beat Watford 3-0 on Saturday. Daniel Farke, to me, slowly but surely, is getting a very exciting tune from this set of players. Like I said after the Millwall game, that is probably one of the best crops of attacking talent you have seen in a championship squad for a long, long time. There are so many different options in forward areas, both centrally and out wide, in that Leeds team to hurt you. And we are starting to see glimpses of that now. Obviously, Joel Pirro on target again at the weekend. Sam Byron popped up from defence, but obviously Jayden Anthony got one. His first goal for Leeds as well. And then you look at the crop of attackers that started that game for Leeds on Saturday. Dan James, who got a couple of assists. Joel Pirro, Somerville, Jorginho Ruta played. Then off the bench, Anthony, Pervada, Gelhardt was on the bench. It's an embarrassment of riches for Daniel Farke. So though obviously he was lagging behind most of the clubs in terms of getting transfer business done during the summer, he has got the nucleus there now. He's got the set of players. He's got the attacking talent there to really attack this division this season. Leeds with that squad should, and obviously it's the championship, so it won't happen, but they should be winning the bulk of their games with that squad. There are not many teams that are going to be able to match them. Obviously, Elland Road has been a bit of a problem area for Leeds in recent months, obviously in the second half of the Premier League season last season. They finally, I think it was 11 games in the league, they went without a home win until the weekend. So that's a big weight off their shoulders to have got rid of that duck, and they can now move on and hopefully settle into some sort of rhythm. So Leeds, really impressive victory again. 7 points in the last three games, three successive clean sheets as well. That's promising for Daniel Farke. So I do believe that Leeds, after a bit of a sluggish start, a bit indifferent, where, like, for instance, where they went to Ipswich one week and won 4-3, and then the following week couldn't get past Sheffield Wednesday at home, drawing 0-0. The past three games where they've played Millwall, Hull and Watford, scoring 6 goals, conceding none, 7 points, it's felt like they've finally clicked into gear. They've announced their arrival, and Daniel Farker is in the process of overseeing something quite exciting, I think is the word. There's a lot to like about this Leeds team. So many good individual players, and he just seems to now be fine-tuning it all together. So I think Leeds will be up there this season. They've got the house in order now after a slow start to the summer. And I think for them, the big thing is, can they just continue just to build and lay the foundations and just gradually build this form up? 2 wins in the last three, it's a good way to go about things.
I think Daniel Farker's played an absolute blinder, hasn't he, this season?
Yeah. And good appointment. I said it at the time. Really good appointment. Knows what it takes. Likeable character.
I questioned it a little bit. I said, could they have done better? I think I'd take my hat off, and I think the role of manager rather than head coach suits.
Yeah, I think it's a sensible one.
In the club, I think he's good where he's got. He needs to have some authority, and I think he's had that at Leeds.
Yeah,
he's done really well with this difficult circumstances.
And I think as well,
situation in the transfer window.
A lot of people said, didn't they? But when he's got Norwich promoted, he's never done anything at Premier League level.
Don't need to at this point.
The bottom line is, Leeds are a Championship club at the minute. He's got 2 promotions from this league. Leeds are focusing on the here and now. Once they, hopefully for them, cross that bridge back into the Premier League, then let's see what he can do. So I think personally, they are proving they were right to go with him so far. But still early days, we're only 8 games in, but they're up into the playoff positions now. Only lost one of those opening 8 games. 3 wins on the board. They would have hoped for more, but they were lagging behind, but it just to now, to me, seems to be starting to click and come together.
Middlesbrough got their first win of the season, George. They beat Southampton 2-1 at the Riverside Stadium. Again, they fell behind. They've conceded the first goal in every single game this season. In fact, before, until they scored the winning goal, they hadn't been ahead in a Championship game this season, which probably also tells why their expected goals tally has been so high, because game state plays a big part in that. I think we saw the disadvantages of playing Lewis O'Brien at left back for the first goal, although it wasn't his fault. The ball was given up high up the pitch. He was caught out of position. Nice ball from Shea Adams. The first real link up we've seen between Adams and Armstrong, and a good ball and a good finish from Adam Armstrong for 1-0. But I thought Southampton sort of retreated a little bit. You'd thought the goal would have given them some confidence and sapped some of the Middlesbrough confidence, but if anything, they sort of retreated a little bit and didn't really know what to do. Russell Martin's been talking a lot this week about scar tissue and about Southampton players not really knowing how to win games and things like that, which I'm not necessarily buying into as an entirety, but they did retreat a little bit in this. Riley McGree got them level from range at 1-1, and then a penalty from Johnny House and winning the game after Taylor Harwood-Bellis was caught grappling with Josh Coburn. I think it was a bit of a soft penalty just because I think they both got hold of each other a little bit. But Harwood-Bellis does quite clearly swing him around, which is probably the deciding factor. It's probably too heavy on the contact. Whereas if they were both holding each other just stationary, I think he'd have probably got away with it. But there's a bit of contact just to sort of shove him round the corner, and that earned the penalty. And Middlesbrough saw it over the line from that point. But 4 defeats in a row as well for Southampton. Russell Martin coming under some pressure. And I think, as we've said, you know, coming into the season, I was fairly neutral on Russell Martin. I could see the pros and I could see the cons, but there's no doubt that this team is performing less than the sum of its parts. And he's got questions to answer. And I understand it's difficult to take over a Championship club that have been relegated, that are used to losing football matches. But I don't think you can't say the same about Leeds United in particular, also Leicester, but Leeds in particular. Farker inherited a far more difficult situation, I would say, with the squad, because of all these release clauses for players leaving on loan. Whereas with Southampton, they kind of knew what they got, really. Apart from, and I think this has been the big difference, they've really, really struggled since they lost Nathan Teller. He's been the big star quality that they had in that early weeks of the season when they won 3 of the first 4 games. That's been the difference. Since he's gone, they've looked not even very good going forward, never mind the defensive deficiencies that we've spoken about in such great detail. So, worrying for Saints, only with 4 defeats in a row, and Middlesbrough, a good win for them to get that monkey off their back.
A vital victory for Borough. Let's be honest, they've needed this for quite a while. Obviously, the success of last season was contributing to the the negativity and the desperation for that win. But as we outlined on last week's podcast, the amount of quality that squad lost from last season, the likes of Chuba Akpom, Ryan Giles, Cameron Archer, Ramsey, there were so many good loan players, and obviously Chuba Akpom sold on a permanent basis during the summer to Ajax, that left huge holes in that team. They went down a different route with the recruitment to what many of us expected, going down the unproven and untested route for most of the summer signings, whereas last season they'd obviously signed young, hungry talent who were destined for big things, and they've gone down the other route this year, signing unknown quantities, whereas we kind of said last week we expected more of the Lewis O'Brien mould, the flair of the Championship, shall we say. But for Borough, they needed this. And I think one thing to point out for Middlesbrough that's been key is their performances have probably been a little bit better than what the results have been suggesting, to be fair. They have been up and at it in most games that they've played. I saw their game against Sheffield Wednesday on the TV last week. First half, they were very poor, but second half, they got the equaliser and they were the better side from that moment onwards. Should have won the game, just didn't really create enough clear-cut chances in that second half for all the ball that they had. But they were very, very good against Southampton at the weekend. They played with a spring in their step and they looked more like a Michael Carrick team that we knew and grew to love last season. So I think for Middlesbrough, the thing for them now that they've got that first win, they've got that weight off their shoulders, can they kick on from it? That is the challenge now. They need to prove it's not just a flash in the pan. And it's very obvious to say that they now need to build on that. But the truth is, they do need to build on it. There is no other way of sort of dressing it up. They've got to find a way now to string a run of results together and start climbing the table. Because though there was a big shift in recruitment and a big shift in personnel in the squad over the summer, they will be expected to do a hell of a lot more than just avoid relegation this season after coming so close to promotion last season. You look at their next crop of games, they've got some difficult assignments coming up. It must be said that their next four games do bring some really interesting challenges either side of the international break. But to look at the three prior to the break, Watford away, Cardiff at home, Sunderland away, they're three really, really tough tests, to be honest, and all in their own right in different ways. So be interesting to see how they kick on. I agree with you that the penalty on Saturday was questionable. I watched the highlights of it and I saw it and I thought, sort of six of one, half a dozen of the other. I thought there was a bit of a shirt tugging from both, but I can see from the referee's point of view why he's given it. We've seen them given and we'll continue to see them given. But I've personally thought it was a little bit fortunate, but on the balance of the game, Middlesbrough did deserve to win. There's no doubt about that. They were the better side, and saw comments from Borough fans saying that it felt like a proper Michael Carrick team again. For Southampton, though,
past Southampton, which is worth noting, which isn't something that happens often with a rushing side, so that shows that they did try and assert themselves on the game.
Yeah, definitely. But as for Southampton, big concern for them at the minute. Yes, it's very early days still into Russell Martin's tenure, still trying to bed a fair few new signings into the equation, but there is an expectancy there this season. And we said, didn't we, that after the first couple of rounds of results where Southampton had got a decent haul of points on the board at the start of the season, they took 10 from the first 12, then have lost four in a row since. It's sort of pressure time for Russell Martin now, because there is an expectancy of that club this season. And granted, it was a big job, a big challenge just to change the mindset of the squad and the mentality of it after pretty much losing every single week last season. But at the minute, they look a side in real trouble, and obviously, they're leaking goals left, right and centre. They've only scored two goals in the last four games as well. So big, big, big challenges ahead for Russell Martin. And he needs a result, because if they lose the fifth game in a row this coming weekend,
Leeds,
there's going to be mounting pressure. And it is Leeds at home. That is based on what we've seen in the last couple of weeks or so, they couldn't really have asked for a harder challenge. And you'd look at that at the weekend. If you say you've got £10 to put on a Championship fixture this weekend, you'd probably be placing your money on Leeds United with the way they're going at the minute and the way Southampton are going. So let's see. It's the Championship. It throws up the unexpected. But at the minute, I think it's very, very difficult not to be fearful for Southampton, because they are leaking goals like a sieve. And at the minute, from what I'm seeing, there's no sort of suggestion to say that's going to change anytime soon.
Another team that desperately needed 3 points and desperately got it was Swansea City. They beat Sheffield Wednesday 3-0 at the Liberty Stadium. We spoke a lot about Sheffield Wednesday on the podcast already this season and their issues. And it was a pretty dire performance. So I want to more talk about Swansea, in truth, because it was a big, big win for them. There's been a lot of unrest that's been building around Michael Duff, who only came in during the summer. And I do think he deserves more time generally. And I'm not just saying this because they won at the weekend, because if you think Swansea under Russell Martin have generally been a mid-table team, probably, if you're looking at results, probably a lower mid-table team had it not been for the two good runs that they had at the back end of both of his seasons when, you know, pressure is completely off. So if we're talking about the first 40 games of both seasons, they've been a lower mid-table team. You then take Joel Perreault out of that, who is their best player by a country mile, and then you appreciate that it's a squad that's been built for a very niche style of player and a very extreme style of play compared to Duff's more mixed style, I would say. They're capable of playing football, but equally capable of having... They need athletic runners in midfield. Not really got that with the squad at the moment. So when you mix all those things in, I think that he does deserve more time. I think he's a good manager. He showed that with Barnes and what he inherited there, and the state he left them in when he left Oakwell was obviously far better than he found it. That said, I don't think he's really helped himself with some of the comments in the press. Equally, losing the South Wales derby is never going to win you too many fans either. But this was a really important win for them. And I thought Sheffield Wednesday started quite well, but once Swansea got the first goal, they were the best side by a mile. Got in front for a penalty after Jamal Lowe converted from the spot. Paul Valentin bringing down Ginnelly. They played to a back four in this game, Swansea, and I thought it probably suits some of the players they've got, because they have got players who can play in wide areas and cause problems. Ginnelly showed that with his direct running to win the penalty. Big moment when Bambo Diaby hit the bar, but that was Wednesday's best opportunity and they didn't deserve anything from this game. And once the second went in, which was a lovely little flick from Charlie Patino to set up Jerry Yates after a good cross, low cross across the box, good finish into the corner, and then Patino, of course, finished it off with a lovely little dink for 3-0. Again, desperate defending from Sheffield Wednesday, who are now the only team in the Championship yet to win. Big, big result for Mike Duff and for Swansea City.
A huge result for Swansea. Obviously, they were seconds away from getting their first victory at QPR, weren't they? A few days earlier, last Tuesday evening, when they drew 1-1 there. And it sort of felt like that they'd produced a bit of a reaction to what had happened against Cardiff 3 days earlier. And obviously, they suffered that late sucker punch at QPR, drew that game 1-1, put an enormous amount of pressure on them heading into that game against Sheffield Wednesday at the weekend, and they delivered. They delivered the goods, they got the victory, and it was a victory they fully merited. Were the better side from the very first whistle, pretty much. Never looked like they were not going to win that game. And obviously, Michael Duff has now got a big weight off his shoulders getting that first win. Similarly to Michael Carrick at Middlesbrough, obviously, Duff had won one game in the Cup, so this was his first league victory, just his second overall. And I think the challenge for him and Swansea now is, similar to Middlesbrough, can they kick on? Can they build on it? Can they progress? Can they move forward? So that's where the challenge is for Swansea. But I think Charlie Patino is slowly beginning to show just how special a talent he is. We saw flashes of what he was capable of last season when on Blackpool, looked really, really bright, vibrant, and got something about him. And I think he's been one of the standout players, as daft as it sounds, for where Swansea have been in the league and how their season started. He's been one of the best players in the division so far. His numbers are quite encouraging. 3 assists and a goal in his first 6 games this season. So he's been a main creative force for them. Really, really important in making that Swansea team tick. So he'll be hopeful now that he can build on, having got his first Swansea goal at the weekend, and add something a little bit fresh and different from midfield. So that's the challenge for Michael Duff now. Can they build on it? Can they move forward? And can they kick on and start climbing the table? As for Sheffield Wednesday, it's an absolute mess, isn't it? There's no way you can dress it up now. It is an absolute dismal state of affairs. We went into detail after the Ipswich game, our last podcast, about how they'd obviously been growing unrest against Daypon Chansiri, the banner being sprayed. There's since been, obviously, an interesting tennis ball protest that we saw against Middlesbrough last Tuesday night. Granted, there weren't many tennis balls thrown onto the pitch. It did look slightly tin pot from looking at it, but at the same time, it raised awareness, it raised sort of concerns that Wednesday fans have got, and it got the national media talking, and it was a starting point in the fans' disgust and anger against Daypon Chansiri's running of the club. So they'll be interesting to see how this develops further. There's talk of another protest ahead of the Sunderland game at Hillsborough on Friday night this coming weekend, again on Sky Sports in front of the nation. So they'll be hoping to do something else. And obviously there's massive calls now for Chisco Munoz to go. There is no doubt about that. People were prepared to give him 10 games. After 8 games, they've seen enough. There is no signs that this team is progressing. There's no sort of inkling or sort of a ray of hope that things are going to improve, things are going to turn a corner.
The local media's not earning him any favours.
No, it's not. We've all seen the image of him laughing after that 3-0 defeat at the weekend. And I've actually read a comment today where he's actually said, of course, the context may be different to the way it's been written, but in terms of what I've read and how I've seen it, is the fact that he said it doesn't matter if Wednesday lose 5, 10 or 25 games, they need to trust the process. Based on what I'm seeing,
and give fans some hope and something to trust and something to believe in. And Sheffield Wednesday, both from the boardroom and from the dugout, have given the fans absolutely nothing to hang any hope on.
Exactly that. And, you know, we view the championship overall as neutrals, and we like to think we give a balanced opinion on every single team, balanced insight and balanced comment. But for anybody who's new listening to this podcast, myself, Elliot, you as well, we are both Wednesday fans. We are hurting from this just as much as any other Wednesday fan. Something has got to change because this team has just been... Well, I'll be honest with you. I've actually had a delivery in the post today. Is there time for a winner? A book that's been written by the two local Sheffield Star journalists, which is all about Wednesday's promotion.
I expect
we are. Promotion miracle is what it says on the front cover of this book. And that's what it was last season. It was masterminded by Darren Moore. And all of that now has just been absolutely torn apart. It's almost as though Deipon Chancery is, and Chisco Munoz as well, to an extent, with the way he's frozen certain players out. He's taken a sledgehammer to all that success, the foundations that have been laid. And Wednesday fans, myself included, we've never felt more distance from the club. And it's almost as though that trip to Wembley at the end of last season, that playoff miracle against Peterborough, in many ways, was a complete waste of time. Because Wednesday, as it stands, they are going to be playing League One football again next season. Make no mistake about it, unless something changes. And I think it's got to start with a change in manager, because it is quite clear that this is not going to work.
Do you remember when I said at the start of this segment I want to talk about Swansea?
We did talk about Swansea. I praised them and spoke about how they've got to build on it. Swansea fully deserved the win. Any Swans fans listening, make no mistake about it. I'm not being bitter here at all. You fully deserve that win with a far better team, played some good football, fully deserved. Absolutely no bitterness here whatsoever. I know how poor Sheffield Wednesday are right now.
Hull City, they're pretty good. They're up to four.
Yeah, they are.
Championship. They beat Stoke City 3-1 on Sunday. Aaron Connolly, I think, is a pretty good feel-good story for the Championship. Someone who burst onto the scene with Brighton, really struggled with injuries and then a couple of bad loans that didn't really do much for him. Came into a pretty uninspiring Hull City team last year and didn't pull up too many trees. But they got him back in this season and he's keeping that number 9 shirt and he's deserving it at the moment. Good poacher's effort, although the large part of the running was made by Philogene. In behind the defence, just too quick for Ben Wilmot in that left centre-back role, and he squared for Connolly to tap in for 1-0. The second goal's really poor from Stoke and you can tell that. Like, if you look, there's a screen, there's almost like you could screenshot it where when Connolly picks up the ball, there's one Hull player in the box and there's four Hull City defenders, and he picks the ball up practically at the corner flag and just is allowed to drive all the way into the box. There is a touch of fortune, of course. The shot is blocked straight into the path of Adama Traore. By the way, how did Adama Traore miss that sitter in midweek against Leeds on a completely separate point? But he got himself on the score sheet by scoring with this one. And then the third, there's a touch of fortune, of course, there is with Regan Slater's shot deflecting off the defender and into the back of the net, sort of looped over Carl Darlow. But Hull City deserved the win, and Hull have looked really good. They're now 7 games unbeaten since they lost in the Carabao Cup to Doncaster, and they're playing some good football. Liam Rossini is getting the best out of a young group of players. Players that have probably been quite low on confidence. You think Liam Delap's not pulled it up in 2 separate loans. Aaron Connolly, we've just spoken about. Philogene did okay, but I wouldn't say he was outstanding in his loans at Stoke and Cardiff. And then you've also got Scott Twine, who he's trying to nurse back into his best form and hasn't proven himself yet at Championship level for as highly as we rate him for that season in League One. So he's getting a lot out of this group. You know, we need to praise not only his tactical ability, but the man management style of it, working with young players. But for Stoke as well, they've got 7 points from their 8 games. They're not scoring any goals. Of course, they got one back through Vidigal in this one, but I've got no idea what their best system is or their best personnel. And Alex Neil doesn't seem to either, because I look and 1 week it's a back four with McNally and Wilmot. 1 week it's a back three with Ender Stevens as a left centre-back, and then it's a back three with Mitchell Rose in the middle of the back three and Wilmot at left centre-back. Daniel Johnson played as a left wing-back in this game. That is not Daniel Johnson's name. So it's all a bit muddled, and they needed a big overhaul. Of course they did in the summer. But did they need as many signings? What did they make in the end? 17? Something around that sort of number? Did they need that many? I don't know. It looks a bit muddled for me at Stoke, and they've not made a good start.
They certainly haven't, and I think it's fair to point out, and I don't mean this with any disrespect, but I think that opening day win against Rotherham United was probably a nod to how poor Rotherham are away from home rather than how good Stoke City potentially were going to be. Stoke have had a really, really poor start to the season. There's no doubt about it. 2 wins from the first 8. They've lost 5 of that number. 7 points on the board. It's been a bad, bad start. I think there's no way of dressing it up. And I think one statistic which is quite alarming, but also at the same time positive in relation to one of their summer signings, is the fact that, and I will say this, unless anything changes in terms of goals scored in the Huddersfield Coventry game, any further goals tonight as we record this as we speak, Andre Vidigal has actually scored the highest percentage of goals for any club in the Championship this season. He scored 50% of Stoke's league goals this season. He scored 4 of their 8 so far, which kind of puts a focus on how much of an onus is on him to step up and deliver. And his goal of the weekend was obviously nothing more than a consolation strike. So for Alex Neil, he's got big problems to try and fix, and fix them quickly, because Stoke fans, they're gonna get restless quickly. They already are. They expect better. They've demanded more over the last few years, and there was a feeling after a really positive summer, whether or not they needed so many new players, but obviously new players, they bring excitement, they bring expectation. But all of that's just gone already. It's drained out of this Stoke team, and there's a real sense of disappointment about them. But on the positive side of things, Hull City, what a run they're on. They're on a really good run. Since being edged out by Norwich on the opening day, 7 unbeaten, as you said. They've won each of their last 3 away games now, which is something they'd not done for a long, long time at this level. Scoring goals on the road as well. Aaron Connolly, interesting fact on him, he's now scored more Championship goals this season than he had in his entire Championship career previously. He's scored 9 career goals in the Championship. 5 of them have arrived already this season, and he's looking like a really shrewd addition on a permanent basis. And then you've mentioned the other attacking players that they've got in and around him, such as Philogene and Twine, Liam Delap as well. Regan Slater's continuing to make things happen from midfield. So there's a lot to like about this Hull City team. And both myself and you, prior to the season when we did our 1-24s, we had Hull City really far down the table. And at that point, it's fair to point out they'd not made that many signings, certainly in attacking areas that where we question where the goals were going to come from. Since then, they've obviously strengthened really, really well, added really, really smart quality to the team. And they're looking like a well-oiled machine that I personally think have got the capabilities this season to mount a playoff charge. I think Liam Rossini is an excellent manager. He's got this team playing with a good style of play, and like you said, really good man management skills, really likable person, certainly comes across that way in the media and TV interviews and things like that. There's nothing really to dislike about Liam Rossini, to be honest. I really like the guy. So I think Hull, certainly as things are progressing at the minute, have got the potential to be in the playoff race this season, because they've got the quality in there, they've got the players. Players are improving under Liam Rossini's management and stepping up, Aaron Connolly being a prime example. So I think Hull have got the credentials to kick on. The only slight criticism that I've got of Hull, only a slight one, is that if they are going to be in and around that playoff picture this season, they've just got to try and find a way to turn these draws at home into wins. They've only won 1 of their opening 4 at home this season. Still unbeaten in all 4, but 3 of that 4 have been draws. So I think that's just the only drawback for Hull. And I'll say something after the weekend results and the way things went. Their game against Plymouth Argyle at the weekend could be quite an interesting one. I'd be interested to see how that goes. But if Hull's recent home form is anything to go by, might be in for another draw.
Yeah, that's a good point. Leicester City, they're top of the pile, George. Probably quite a testament to how good a weekend it's been, the Championship, that we're talking about the league leaders right near the bottom of the pile. But it's been a good weekend. They beat Bristol City 1-0. It was not a 1-0 game. They're obviously they've got seven wins out of eight. Leicester, they've been really good, and I thought they were exceptional, to be honest, against Bristol City. A combination of poor finishing and also some very resolute and last ditch defending, some decent saves from Max O'Leary, kept them at bay until Jamie Vardy scored from the penalty spot. No complaints either from Nigel Pearson about the result. But in the last three games, you know, the Southampton game, away at Norwich, they made changes, but obviously still got over the line in what's a tough place to go at the moment. And then beating Bristol City, although it was 1-0, the way they did that and the dominance and the way they're creating chances feels like things are starting to click a little bit under Enzo Maresca. And they've already been getting the points on the board, so they could get even better. But they absolutely deserve this victory and deserve 3 points.
I think, first of all, I think you have to make a point to Hull City and just how impressive that away win was prior to the international break. That was the way Leicester have played so far this season. For Hull to have gone to the KP and won that game by goal to nil was quite impressive. But you're absolutely right about this game against Bristol City at the weekend. I've seen the highlights of the game, and it was an onslaught, wasn't it? The scoreline suggests it was a very, very close run battle, but the truth is Leicester were anything but that. They were dominant. They had a wide range of opportunities to put the ball in the net, and obviously it required a penalty. Jamie Vardy stepping up, delivering, producing a trademark Jamie Vardy celebration by taunting the away fans. And, you know, it got the job done for Enzo Maresca's team. 7 wins out of 8. Really good week for them, obviously. Started with that 4-1 win at Southampton, then went to Norwich and won by a couple of goals, and then got another clean sheet and another win at the weekend. So Leicester beginning to assert their authority in the way that we expected them to this season. They are by far and away the best team in this division in terms of capabilities and resources. The squad's there, the facilities are world class. And Enzo Maresca, though he's not sort of gone in there and made a mass change in terms of personnel, they've retained quite a lot of the players that they were relegated with last season. And those players realistically should have done a lot better in the Premier League than what they did last season. So it was always obvious that they were going to be riding high toward the top this season. So Leicester City off to a really good start. 7 wins out of 8, as I say. Obviously, threw in the Carabao Cup as well to the third round, where they've got that glamour tie with Liverpool away from home this midweek. So that might have happened by the time you listen to this. But in terms of the next championship fixtures, you'll be watching them on Sunday, Elliot. Blackburn at Ewood Park. Then they've got Preston at home, and then Stoke at home heading into the international break. So 3 games Leicester will be looking at. They'll obviously bring all sorts of obstacles and challenges. They'll be thinking, we can head into this international break with another 3 wins. So, like I say, any team that beats Leicester this season is going to have to be a really, really good side. So I think you've got to give credit for that to Hull City for that win at the start of September. But Bristol City, though they tried toward the end of the weekend, it was just a case of didn't do an awful lot wrong. Leicester just far superior.
I think so. Cardiff, they beat Sunderland 1-0 as well on Sunday. Really good result for them. Black Cats, I do think, will wonder how they lost this. They did have some very good opportunities. Jack Alnick in goal with some very good saves, some good defending as well. Gutas, I thought, was very impressive at centre-back. I don't think he's had the greatest start to his Cardiff City career, but I thought he did really well in this game alongside Mark McGuinness, who, of course, got the winner. I would say he headed in the winner, but probably the ball slapped him in the face for the winner is probably a fairer reflection of what actually happened. They all count, as they would say. But it's 3 wins in a row for Cardiff, and suddenly they're up to 7th. And the Errol Belushan is well underway. And they've not had Aaron Ramsey in the last 2 either. So a very, very good 10 days for Cardiff City. And, you know, having had a club that's been pretty much on a downward trajectory for the last 2 years, Cardiff fans deserve a little bit of happiness and to enjoy it. And do I think Cardiff are going to finish anything above 16th? Not particularly. But it's nice for the fans to have something to believe in, and I might be proven wrong, and I hope I am, because I think Cardiff fans have had plenty of misery and just mediocrity is probably the right word to deal with over the last 2 years. So at least they've got something they can get behind and believe in this season.
Yeah, 100%. Like I said, over the summer, their recruitment was smart. It was quite impressive, actually, for the restrictions and the battles that they've been up against. And Errol Bullitt has come in as a complete unknown quantity, like several other managers have come into the Championship in recent years, and he's had a really, really good start. I think you have to look at Cardiff's results, and obviously I've just got their results in front of me now, and you look at the sequence of green that they've had in terms of the last 3 results, 3 successive victories, 4 wins in the last 5. But even in the yellow, which was the draw away at Leeds, and those three red markers in there, they've been edged out in all of their defeats as well. They lost 2-1 to QPR at home, lost 2-1 at Leicester, lost 3-2 at Cardiff, and they were obviously 2-0 up at Leeds, and 3-2 up at, lost 3-2 at Ipswich, should I say. Cardiff losing to Cardiff. That was a good one, wasn't it? It's been a long week, long day. But yeah, it's. I think Cardiff have been quite resolute, I think is the word. I think they've gone in there with a sort of expectancy for people to underestimate them and criticise them. And they've risen to that challenge and they're starting to change people's perceptions of them, because I think they've played some good football so far this season. And I go back to that opening half at Leeds on the opening day. They were 2-0 up in that game. Yeah, it was an onslaught in the second half and Leeds got back into it right at the very last. But if you'd have said to a Cardiff fan on the opening day, you're going to go to Leeds and get a point, they'd have snapped your hand off. So I think you've got to look at that, and you've also got to take into account that they've played Leicester away from home so far. They've played Ipswich away from home so far. And yeah, they were in a position to take something from both games, but they only lost by the odd goal, which shows that they have got the capabilities to compete with the better teams in this league. So if we're looking at Cardiff and thinking they're going to be languishing around sort of maybe 13th to 18th this season, bottom half of the table, if they can compete with the likes of Sunderland, Leicester, those sort of teams, they're going to have no trouble, you wouldn't think, competing with the likes of, say, your Stoke Cities, your Rotherhams, your Sheffield Wednesdays. Sheffield Wednesday have already beaten this season. They've got Rotherham to come this weekend.
Stoke fans are not going to appreciate you lumping them well, with the other lot.
Well, let's be honest. Stoke, at the minute, they're in a mess. There's no two ways of beating about the bush at the minute. They are struggling. So I think Cardiff, really impressive. And, you know, I think a big thing as well, that when you look at Cardiff's recent results as well, 2 clean sheets in the last 3. That's a positive step at the other end of the field, moving in the right direction. So Errol Bullitt, really, really impressive start. Encouraging Cardiff, moving in the right direction. Rotherham at home at the weekend, be big favourites for that one. Then Middlesbrough away. So I think Cardiff will be looking at the next few games and thinking, if we can play to the maximum of our capabilities, we can continue to climb the table and maybe just shock one or two this season. So still early days, but I think Errol Bullitt can be really, really pleased with what he's achieved so far.
3 draws in the Championship, George. Rotherham 1, Preston North End 1. A good point for the Millers, particularly after a pretty abysmal performance away at Millwall in midweek, losing 3-0. They are much better at the New York Stadium. They went ahead for a brilliant strike from Jordan Hugel, of course, against his former club. The game was levelled through Liam Lindsay with a good header from from close range. Matt Taylor thought there was a foul on the goalkeeper, but I'm not sure. I'm not really having that. I think Victor Johansson was pretty soft with the contact. So I don't think that was a foul personally. It finished 1-1. 2-0-0s. Birmingham QPR wasn't a classic, but the goalkeepers were on top in this game. There were opportunities for both teams, with Ruddy and Begovic saving well from good opportunities. The highlight was probably Sam Field's miraculous clearance off the goal line and what would have been a pretty embarrassing own goal for Steve Cook. So good athleticism from Sam Field to keep QPR in it, and a good point for them away at Birmingham. And finally, West Brom 0, Millwall 0 is probably a game that won't go down in the memory bank and won't be getting the DVDs out anytime soon for that one. But it's a point that doesn't really help either team in their quest to get up the table either. I want to talk about Huddersfield Town just before we finish, George. They're currently losing 1-0 to Coventry in the 51st minute. But they've got a new manager in the dugout since we last spoke. Neil Warnock has left the club, as we sort of speculated on last Sunday. And Darren Moore is the new manager. 3-year deal, coming in having left Sheffield Wednesday in the summer. We're obviously well aware of the pros and cons of Darren Moore. How do you think he fits with Huddersfield's style of play?
Personally, I think it's a very safe and solid appointment. I think Darren Moore, as we saw last season, he's a manager that commands a hell of a lot of respect. He's a very likeable character within the game. And like I say, I think it's a very safe bet. I think it's solid, secure for where Huddersfield are at, as a club at this moment in time. Neil Warnock obviously went in there, produced an absolute miracle last season. And obviously started this season reasonably well. Results had picked up in the last couple of weeks. And then obviously Darren Moore's come in now as sort of a long-term vision to try and take the club forward. Huddersfield predominantly play with a 3-5-2. They've got the personnel to suit it. It was Darren Moore's favoured formation during his time at Sheffield Wednesday.
I'm currently playing a 3-5-2.
That doesn't surprise me in the slightest. It is the way that he played at Hillsborough with his Wednesday promotion winning team last season.
Which is weird. They've got Caroma and and Zerborg up front.
I suppose it's just experimentation, isn't it? First game, and obviously we're talking about this, and he's only pretty much halfway through his first assignment, so it's impossible to sort of judge what he's done so far. But in terms of looking at the appointment and that alone, I think it's a sensible one. I do really, really like Darren Moore. Yes, I'm a little bit biased with that because of the way he handled things at Sheffield Wednesday. And like I've said to you privately very many, many times, I wish he was still at Hillsborough. I was a big, big fan of him. I just liked everything about him. Yeah, his football wasn't...
He's gone.
His football wasn't the most glamorous. It wasn't the most exciting and enticing. But Wednesday were always competitive under him. And he's sort of a manager that commanded respect, and he rebuilt a fractured club at Hillsborough, and that's just re-emerged since he left. There's no doubt about that. So a good man manager, a very likeable person as both a football man and as a human being, really, really, really likeable guy. So I think Huddersfield will do okay under it. I really do. I hope it works out for him. So we'll see how things go. Obviously, losing at the minute, his first game, but he's only been working with the squad for a few days. Let's not forget, he was only appointed on Thursday. Monday night, as we record this, only had a few days to get used to his players, and he'll be adjusting things as the weeks go by. So it might take a little bit of time for him to adapt and get up to speed and know his players to learn him, and he learns things about them. But I think on the whole, I think Huddersfield could have done a hell of a lot worse than getting Darren Moore in. But obviously, big shoes to fill with Neil Warnock doing so well. And let's see where Neil Warnock pops up in, no doubt, January, February time. But we'll see what he does. But to be honest with you, I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't crop up before then, because I think there could soon be a few clubs who may not be on the blower to him, but probably certainly should be. So we'll see what happens. But I think we'll definitely see on Neil Warnock at the ripe old age of 74 crop up somewhere else before too long.
I think with Darren Moore, for me, I think Huddersfield have had such a... just bonkers couple of years where they've been one game away from the Premier League and then definitely should have got relegated. In any of us, you know, if anyone else in charge, they would have gone down.
Yeah.
I think Darren Moore is a safe pair of hands.
I think at this point, Huddersfield are at a point where they need someone to build the club, don't they? And take it forward, build stability. And Darren Moore is exactly that. He is a builder in terms of club building.
Record at Championship, although it feels like he's still got to prove himself at Championship a little bit, which is kind of what anyone feels like when they drop down to League One. He had a very good record at West Brom.
He did. He was
West Brom squad.
It was a very good West Brom side that featured the likes of Harvey Barnes, Dwight Gayle that season. However, you've still got to do it and manage it all. And I think at West Brom at the time that they got rid of him, I think they were fourth in the table, which tells you everything about him. So, yeah, players obviously play a factor in clubs thriving, personnel, quality and everything like that. But you've got to have a manager who can lead it all. And like I say, Darren Moore, safe pair of hands, solid shout. So we'll be interested to see how things go. And we'll no doubt talk about him a little bit more in depth next week after he's had a couple of games at the helm. I think they've got Ipswich this coming weekend. So be a tough first home game for him.
And that marks the end of this week's Championship Chat podcast. Please make sure you are subscribed to this podcast feed wherever you get your podcast from, and you can get the latest episode from us every single week. Follow us on Twitter at ChampChatPod24. And a massive thank you once again to our sponsors, Cards Accepted, for their support this season. Make sure you go and check them out at cardsaccepted.co.uk. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of the Championship Chat podcast.
This is the Championship Chat podcast, your home of news, views, and debate from England's second tier.